Hello, everyone. My name is Chase, and welcome to the RTR Forward podcast. Just me today. I got no host. It's been pretty rough, you know, ever since David stepped away from the show. He's been gone for a few episodes now, and so today is going to be a solo podcast. You're going to listen to me talking to the microphone for, I don't know, for how long. I don't know how long this is going to go, but if you've ever recorded a podcast or just talked to yourself for like 30 to 45 minutes in a room, it's just, slowly just drives you insane. And so as we progress through today's episode, I'm just gonna slowly go insane. And so hopefully next week we'll get another individual to co-host with me. We're just kind of jumping through people, seeing people's availability, who wants to talk, what do they want to talk about, stuff like that. Also been pretty busy, so hopefully I talked to David about a week ago, and he said hopefully he's gonna get back on the show in the end of March. He's currently in the process of building. He's been building a house for like the last like 8 months, 9 months. You know, when I think about this, I'm thinking about like a pregnancy, like like the mama house and the mom and the daddy house conceived a house, and it's been you know, in the old canal, you know, getting built for the last 9 months. I don't actually know how long it takes to house takes to build a house, but anyways, he's been going through that whole process. So I think now he's like doing all like the mortgage stuff. And I don't really know a lot about that. I'm pretty young. I've only really rented for the last few years. But eventually, I'm going to buy myself a house as well. But yeah, he's dealing with all that stuff. Apparently, it's very stressful from what I've heard from talking to different people. So hopefully, he can make his way back onto the show so we can have a nice little consistent duo again like we did earlier this year. But so yeah, we've got some pretty interesting things to talk about today. First off, we're gonna give a slight world championship recap, and then we're gonna talk about some new products that are coming out for Magic the Gathering later this spring, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about Pioneer. So just last weekend, my printer is making noises and it's gonna literally drive me insane. So this happens a lot, and when David and I used to record, and when I've recorded with Chase recently, like my printer just randomly goes off, and it's just so annoying. I have no idea why it's going off. It literally has no ink in it. It hasn't had ink for weeks, but randomly, and it's only, I swear, it's only when I'm recording, it just randomly goes off. So if you hear that in the background, trust me, my printer may be possessed. But anyways, last week we had the World Championship happen. So it was World Championship 2020. It was last weekend. That was February the 14th through the 16th. We had, I think it was like 16 to 18 players, all qualified either through the MPL or through some of the other like players tour events, stuff like that. So it was a pretty intense tournament. Deck variety was, it was actually pretty, there was a lot of variance to it. We had some blue-white control decks. We had some Fires of Invention decks. We had some mono-red. And then we had just like one little show of Jund Sacrifice. So that was Piotr Golgovsky, also known as Canister, was the only individual playing Jund Sacrifice. And he actually piloted it really well. They kind of asked him why he was playing that deck, because like that deck has not like really been in the meta recently. Like we've seen a lot of Fires, we've seen a lot of blue white control, and we've seen just this resurgence of like a mono red deck, which has actually been extremely powerful. But Jund Sacrifice just hasn't been around. Like it was at its peak right before Theros came out, and then it's kind of just slowly dwindled in the meta. And it was just really interesting to see him bring a deck like that to this such a high esteemed tournament. Like the World Championship, there is no higher tournament. This is the tournament to play. But he honestly did pretty well with it. I don't think he made it to the top eight. Actually, looking right now, no, he did not make it to the top eight with it. Basically, the top eight was just a mixture of some Jeskai Fires, some Mono Red, and some Blue White Control. Just kind of the decks we expected to see in this tournament. But took it all the way up. And actually, when this was announced, if you play MTG Arena, if you pay attention to that at all, they offered up a little vote for your champion. So this is something that I've had experience with in the past. I know Hearthstone, which was another game. I know, it's Hearthstone. Nobody wants to talk about Hearthstone, but it's a game I used to play. And they used to do that for Pick Your Own Champion, where you could unlock packs and stuff like that. So it looks like Magic, finally, I think they could have done this like a year ago, but they're finally starting to integrate their esports into something more, especially when it comes to like playing the game. So you could pick a champion or pick a player, and then depending on how well the player did in the tournament, you could get prizes. So I think it was either XP or packs. And then if they ended up taking the trophy, you actually got your own little trophy pet, which looks like the Mythic Championship trophy. So that's pretty cool. But I sunk all my chips. So I'd been watching Andrea Mengucci a lot, and he just seemed like such a strong player. And so I sunk all my chips into him. And then I don't even think he made it to top eight. What's really unfortunate is so with this format, it was basically draft and then standard. And so the draft portion was basically drafted in person. So they you got six people at a table opening up some real world packs, flipping through, picking stuff, and building a deck out of that. Well, then to speed up gameplay, stuff like that, they actually took those decks and imported them into Arena and then set up matches like that, which was really interesting. It really showed basically how bad the drafting is in Arena, because they're like, hey, you know, if they basically just stuck all the pros like in these little bot pods like they do currently on MTG Arena, dude, everybody would just have the most busted decks, because those bots do not know how to draft, and they just pass you the best cards. So basically Magic acknowledged in a roundabout way that the MTG Arena drafting system is not good, and so they actually had them draft in paper and then take those lists and import them into MTG Arena. So what's really funny and really unfortunate, actually, for Andrea Mengucci, and unfortunate for me since I was rooting for him, is it looked like when he was submitting his deck, he had put two Archons, which, if you don't know, in Theros, there are two different Archons. There's Archon of Sun's Grace, which is the rare that makes little Pegasus when you play enchantments, has constellation. And then there's also another Archon, which just gets cheaper. It's just I think it's like a 3/3 flyer that gets cheaper, equal to your devotion. So he had drafted two of those common level Archons. Well, basically what happened is when he set up his deck list, he accidentally wrote down the other Archon, and they built the decks, and then he basically got disqualified round one. He was issued a game loss. He obviously wasn't removed from the tournament, but he was issued a game loss immediately. So he immediately went into it 0-1, and it just got worse from there. I think he ended up like going 1-3 and then being eliminated from day one, which is really unfortunate. But if you were keen-eyed and watching PVDD, and that's Paolo Vito Dama de Rosa, if you were watching him and rooting for him, he actually carried it all the way on the back of an Azorius control deck, which I honestly think is probably the best deck. It's the best deck in the format right now. And honestly, when control is the best deck, the format's not that bad. Like the format, like it's, trust me, I hate playing against control as much as everybody else does. I think control versus control mirrors are just the most boring thing ever. But what's really nice is since control decks are top of the meta, that means aggro decks like this mono red aggro just kind of break out, and they are the counter to control, which is just awesome. Because, you know, we saw control, Esper control back, I don't know, not last January, but more so like last March, right before War of the Spark came out. We had Esper control, we had another mono red deck, and then we had like a few mid-range decks. Like that's what I would consider a pretty healthy meta, because you kind of have different decks that counter each other. The weird thing, though, especially with two of the three decks in the meta, is they're all kind of like combo decks. So you've got like an aggro combo deck in mono red, and the combo is Embercleave. You literally play that, and you usually win. Like, not if not on the spot, but literally like either the next turn or the turn after. That card is so good, and so if you own that card right now, that card just shot up like $10. So good for you. I am the ding dong who sold. So I opened two copies in my pre-release. I sold both of those copies when they were $4. I need one for a commander deck, and I am regretting it so much right now. But that card shot up because it's just broken. That card is so good in mono red. It was what mono red needed, and it's just great. And I like, hold on, I hear a dog barking in the background. The dog needs to chill. I hope you guys can't hear that. But no, so that's a combo. So Embercleave is a combo. And then Fires, which literally just throws down Fires of Invention. And then, boom, like, Cavalier into Cavalier, giving my boys haste. Maybe even Kenrith, give my boys haste. It's just, it's so combo. Just, you play Fires, and then you're immediately playing another spell. So you're either playing the Sphinx of Foresight, which is the 4-mana 4/4 Sphinx with flying, and has the, at the beginning of your upkeep, scry one. Or you're playing Teferi to kind of shut down some of your opponent's interaction on your turn. And then pass back to your turn. If you've got the nut draw, you are playing Cavalier into Cavalier, hasting them up, and then swinging for 15, 19 damage. If your opponent, especially in this meta, has shocked himself down by playing his shock lands, then it's a pretty easy kill. And I think it's just such a good deck. But I think Azorius Control, it just slots so nicely into there. They've got a lot of early game. They got Narset, Teferi. They've got the new Saga that plays as well. Finals were Azorius Control versus Jeskai Fires. Just an insane match. Just crazy. But yeah, PVDD, Paolo Vito, Dama de Rosa ended up taking the match and taking it home. And he is such a fantastic player. Seen a lot of really, really great results from him over the last 2-3 years. He's just been steady. He is just such a consistent player. He's so good. If I did not put all my chips in one basket, I totally would have thrown some at him. He's such a good player. So if you ended up picking him, then congratulations. You have a trophy. You have a little trophy avatar or pet in Magic Arena. So yeah, I know another thing. So if you ended up watching it, you remember, if you watched the finals, you remember it was game two of like the third or fourth like set. Or round, whatever it's called, because I know Paolo Vito had to win two rounds or two full games, and I think it was Marcio Carvalho had to win three games because he was the underdog. He was coming from the loser's bracket or the lower bracket. So the final game, so it was either way, and yeah, Marcio kept just a very risky keep, just so risky. He basically kept two islands. I think it was like a fire, two fires, and like, I can't even remember what the hand is at this point, but here, hold on, let me look it up. I actually posted it on my Twitter. Quick plug, if you want to look at my Twitter, I'm at ParchedMTG, if you want to follow me personally. If you want to follow the podcast and the channel in general, I guess the podcast, would be RTR Forward, and that's on Twitter as well. I post random stuff, but let me see here. So he kept a hand of Castle Vantress Island, Teferi Time Raveler, Elspeth Conquers Death, Legion Warboss, Fires of Invention, and another Fires of Invention. So, extremely risky keep. Two blue sources, a bunch of cards that require white or red. People were basically ridiculing him for this keep, but I can see both sides. There's a lot of pressure for sure. Like you are like one game away from like, I think it's like $700,000. Just immense amount of pressure, and I think he was gambling on a Sacred Foundry for sure, and it ended up not paying off. He ended up not drawing. He ended up in the most comical arena fashion. He ended up drawing like two islands, like with his hand full of just white and red cards, and yeah, he lost that game, and that's the game that basically sealed the other guy to win it all. So congratulations to PVDD. Great plays, just a fantastic player, and that basically sums up the World Championship. Now, during the World Championship, we did have a chance to see some new decks. So, the Challenger decks, if you remember them, if you've played before or in the last year, you would remember that there were Challenger decks last year in the March-April period, where basically, if you don't know what Challenger decks are, they are basically standard decks. They are ready to go. Somewhat competitive FNM standard decks. So this is a deck that you can buy, just comes right out of the box, sleeve it up, and then you can immediately play it in FNMs and actually do pretty well with it. These decks have been notoriously decent in comparison to some of the other like pre-constructed decks that you'll see from products like the Planeswalker decks. Those are not FNM playable. They are like, they're legal, but like you don't want to play them in FNM because they're just not good. You're just going to get stomped on. Whereas these Challenger decks, what they're called, are actually pretty decent. So they went ahead and announced the four new ones that are going to be for released, I believe, in April or so. And there are four different deck types. And you'll notice with this, so obviously Wizards and R&D, they have to plan really far ahead. So they are building these decks and predicting what the meta will look like 8 months in advance. And you'll definitely tell by what these decks are. So I'll go ahead and explain them. So the first deck is Final Adventure. It is basically a Golgari Adventure deck, which was a popular deck last Standard. So right after we left the Oko era, like when he ravaged. And you ever think about Oko? You ever just sit there and just think about him? Because like, it's been a while since I've really thought about Oko. And when I start like thinking about him again, I just realize like how much of a stain he was on all these formats. And just like, he's been gone for like, I don't know, 3 months now. And it's just like, oh, fresh breath of air every time you think back about it. And like, anytime in the future, anytime you think like, hey, this meta sucks, Teferi is terrible, Nyss is terrible, just remember that Oko was in the format. Just remember, he was in the format for 3 months. Just remember. Not even 3 months. No, I think he was banned in December. Yeah, roughly like 2 months he was in Standard, and it just wreaked havoc. So anyways, what you'll kind of get the gist from for the Challenger decks is a lot of these are basically predictions, and a lot of these are Standard decks that were pretty popular right before Theros Beyond Death came out. So the first deck is Final Adventure. It's a Golgari Adventure deck. It runs the typical adventure suite. So you got Edgeball Innkeeper, which draws you cards when you play adventure creatures. You got Foulmire Knight, which is an adventure creature himself. You've got other, looks like they kind of went with like a knight synergy here. So you got Smitten Swordsmaster, Order of Midnight, which is another two more adventure cards. Lovestruck Beast, which is a very common one. Runs Murderous Rider. So you actually, if you purchase this kit, I think these are $30 to $40 a piece. I don't actually know what the MSRP on them is. $30. Somewhere around the $30 range. We don't have MSRP nowadays, so it's going to be $30 to $40. But you'll basically get yourself two Murderous Riders. So let's talk about like the good pickups from this. So obviously there's some value in these. And that's what made these stand apart, especially in previous years, is there's a lot of value in these. And there's a lot of like cards that you actually want. So let's talk about that for a second. So we've got Knight of the Ebon Legion. There's two copies of that, which is just one of the best one drops in black currently, which is the knight that gets bigger. You can pay three mana and make him a 4/5 with Death Touch, and he grows bigger if a player loses four or more life. So two copies of that. That card was like $10 at the like mid last Standard when Mono Black was really big at Pioneer, and that card's kind of fallen down, but it's about $5 a card. So just a really nice pickup. You got yourself two Murderous Riders, which is sitting at about $6 to $7 a pop right now, just straight out of the box. Two Murderous Riders, you can get yourself a Vraska Golgari Queen, just a one copy. She's like a $12-$13 card, just a really awesome planeswalker, fits really well just in the sacrifice decks. I don't know if anybody's really playing her main board anymore, but I know she saw play main board before. Just a really good pickup. You can also pull yourselves two copies of Castle Lochthwain, which is the what I'd say probably the most expensive of the castle series from Throne of Eldraine. It's the one that you can tap, draw cards, and lose life equal to the number of cards in your hand. Most notably, probably one of the best pickups from this little box here is one copy of Fabled Passage, which is, frankly, this card is just constantly been going up. This card's roughly $19 now. It's a fetch land. It's what it is. It's a fetch land with a condition, but it's one of the best fetch, it's the only fetch land that's good in Pioneer. So this card is always going to hold value. It's always going to be expensive. So the fact that you're going to get roughly like $90 of value just from this is just insane. You can also, if you look at the sideboard, you pick up four copies of Noxious Grasp, which is like a $2 uncommon from Core Set 2020. So a lot of good pickups. As for the construction of this deck, I think based on what I see, it's a pretty simple, a slightly more power down version of the Golgari Adventures that we saw back in last Standard. But it definitely looks like it's definitely pretty good. One interesting note here from what I'm seeing is that there's actually no Theros Beyond Death cards in this. There's only one. You got Cling to Dust, which is the only card from Theros Beyond Death. It's one black for an instant, exile target card from a graveyard. If it was a creature card, you gain 3 life. Otherwise, you draw a card with escape of 4 mana, 3 and a black, and exile 5 other cards. That's the only card that I can see that is in Theros Beyond Death that is in this deck. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of cards from this new set, because these decks were all built quite a bit back at that time. So already some right out the gate, some really good value. Get yourself a Fabled Passage, 2 Castle Lockthwains, 2 Murderous Riders, 1 Veraska Golgari Queen, and 2 Knight of Ebon Legions. I think that in general, if you don't have those cards and you can pick those up at your local game store or online for like $30 to $35, like that is a steal. That's like $90 of value. So if you don't have those cards, you want to pick them up and you want to play a deck like this, or you're interested in those color pairs and playing something with that, then I think that's going to be really good. Next off, we're going to jump into, so this one they predicted pretty well. It's called Cavalcade Charge. Now, if you remember back, I think it was right around rotation, or slightly before that, we had ourselves a Cavalcade deck, which is based around Cavalcade of Calamity, which is a 2-cost enchantment, 1 and a red. Whenever a creature you control with power 1 or less attacks, Cavalcade of Calamity deals 1 damage to the player or planeswalker that creature is attacking. So you can set multiple of those on the field, deal a lot of damage, and just combos a lot. Now, looks like they took that idea and kind of brought in, like, this honestly, this deck is quite literally the mono red deck that was in the World Championship. Minus a few cards, it's basically it. So you've got yourself 4 Fervent Champions, 4 Scorched Spitters, 4 Rimrock Knights, 4 Runaway Steamkins, 4 Bonecrusher Giants, 4 Torbrand, Thane of the Red Fell. It's running 3 Chandra Acolyte of Flames. It's running 4 Light of the Stages. Like I said, running 4 Cavalcade of Calamity. It's running 3 Castle Imbriths, which is the red castle that you can tap it and pump your team by +1/+0. And notably, it's actually running 1 Embercleave. So if you pick up this deck for, I don't know, roughly $30-$40, you can get yourself a copy of Embercleave, which is one of the most sought out red equipments I've seen in a very long time. So just a really good pickup. But like, you're basically getting the mono red deck. You can take out like 10, it has 3 10 Street Dodgers, take those out, add in like a few more Embercleaves if you've got them, and you've got yourself the mono red deck, like just right there. It's run, what I think is amazing is it's got a playset of Torbrand, playset of Bonecrusher Giant, playset of Runaway Steamkin, and a playset of Fervent Champion. Those are all just mainstays, and they're going to be mainstays in a mono red archetype until it rotates. So yeah, this is also some really good value, roughly valued at like $110. So if you're looking to play mono red once these come out, then pick this one up for sure, because it's got literally everything you need. And like I said, notably, it's got that 1 Embercleave, which is just awesome. Fantastic. It also runs 3 Experimental Frenzies in the sideboard. So if you don't have that card, it's dropped a lot in value since rotation, but I think it's still just a powerhouse for red. So that deck's another just great pickup. I don't see this deck like mono red. I don't see this going away unless they like print Oko again. If we go into Ikoria, like this next April set, and we get another version of Oko or something similar, then like, yes, aggro's going to die, but I don't see this deck losing any strength. I think this deck can only get stronger. And I think it's going to be really good. So this might be a good pickup if you're looking to like not spend a ton of money and you just want to play just a really aggressive deck that's just not very expensive, that is only going to get better as more cards come out. So that's going to be a very good deck. Next off, so this is another deck that was really popular right after Oko got banned, but has kind of fallen out of favor as we've moved into the new standard from Theros. This is Flash of Ferocity. This is a Simic, basically a Simic Flash deck. So if you remember this deck, it had Nightpack Ambushers, Frilled Mystics, it ran Spectral Sailors, Brineborn Cutthroats, just all that stuff, and just a package of counters, Opt, Quench, Senator Sabotage, stuff like that. Looks like this deck actually comes with, show you some of the notables for some of the more expensive cards in this deck. So you've got 1 copy of Brazen Borrower, which is That $25 fairy, so literally $100 for a playset of this card. A standard all-star. This card is literally in almost every blue deck. It's just so good. You can get yourself one copy of that from this deck. You pick yourself up four copies of Night Pack Ambusher, which if you're playing some kind of green-based flash deck, you want this card as a four of, because it's just increments insane value, especially if you're playing a flash kind of game as well. And then it runs, again, one Fabled Passage. So if you're really wanting a Fabled Passage, let's say you got three of them like I do, and want to pick up that fourth copy so you can have a playset. Maybe you're not really for the Golgari Adventures list. Maybe you're more of a blue player like me. And so you want to pick up the Flash of Ferocity for like 30, 40 bucks, which is just amazing. So you're going to get yourself a Brazen Borrower and a Fabled Passage, which together is already like 50 bucks. So that's really awesome. More so like 45, but anyways, you can pick yourself up some Aether Gust from the sideboard, Shifting Ceratops, Mystical Disputes, which is just another really expensive uncommon. You're going to get two Temples, you'll get two copies of Castle Vantress, which is the blue scrying castle. In general, this deck has a lot of value too. If you'll notice as we go on, like all these decks have such value. So if you're really looking into getting some really expensive cards, like all packaged together for a pretty cheap price, like these Challenger decks are for you. Obviously, we're going to see as these release that a lot of these cards that are expensive, like Brazen Borrower, Fabled Passage, Embercleave, we're going to see them go down a little bit. Just like last year, it was either last year or the year before where we had Chandra, Torch of Defiance in a deck. I think it was 2 years ago. Chandra, Torch of Defiance, and Hazoret, which those are two really old cards at this point. Old is subjective here, but roughly 2016, 2017. But both of those were pretty expensive cards in Standard. Chandra, Torch of Defiance is still like a $20 card, but they had one copy of her and one copy of Hazoret in the deck, and they actually dropped like $4 or $5. So around the time that printed. So you'll definitely see some of these cards that are in these decks definitely drop in price as people are just buying them for the cards and then selling the cards. You'll definitely see the market kind of be flushed with them. So if you wanted to pick up these cards for a cheaper price, I would wait until April if you can. If you can wait, I know you get the, I know Magic players have this urge to just buy cards, and trust me, dude, I have this urge. I literally just finished a Commander deck. I just sold a bunch of cards and bought a bunch of cards because I really wanted to build this Izzet Dalakos Commander deck. I'm so excited about it. I've invested in quite a bit of the swords, which is like the sword of Feast and Famine and stuff like that. But I get it. You gotta buy Magic cards to play Magic cards. But if you can wait, and you wanna pick up some of these cards outside of these little decks, then I just wait until after they come out. Give it a week or two, and you'll definitely see some of these more pricier cards come down in value, which is fantastic. And then finally. So that's our blue-green flash deck out of the way. Next, and finally, we've got our fourth deck, which is the Allied Fires. If you get my drift and you get, you know, what that's saying, it's a Fires of Invention deck. So what you'll notice looking at the deck list for this is it is the old Fires of Invention deck. So if you remember back around the time Oko was like picking up steam, but like the Simic decks weren't like super crazy yet. People really weren't picking up on them just yet. You saw like a Fires of Invention deck, Jeskai Fires deck go around, which was instead of running the Cavaliers, it was running the Planeswalkers. So it was running like Narset, Part of Veil, Saheeli, Sargon, the Masterless, Teferi, Ugin, stuff like that. Also running the Fae of Wishes to pull things out of your sideboard and like a solo Kenrith. And so this deck is really just a snapshot of that. So you're going to see some notable cards. You've got Kenrith, the Returned King, which was the buy a box promo for Throne of Eldraine. Still a staple today in Fires of Invention. So if you're missing a copy of that, you can get a Kenrith, the Returned King. It's got notably four copies of Narset, Part of Veils, just an all-format, all-star. It's like $2.50 uncommon, which is just crazy. You can pick yourself up some. So it runs three Sarkon the Masterless, one Ugin the Ineffable, three copies of Deafening Clarion. Another notable thing is it has a Steam Vents, so it's got a Shockland, and this is actually the only one to have a Shockland in it out of all the Challenger decks this year. So you can get yourself a Steam Vent. It has quite a few Temples, Temple of Enlightenment, Temple of Epiphany, Temple of Triumph, stuff like that. And that's about it. So this deck, Allied Fires, is probably the least valuable deck out of all the decks that you're gonna see, that you've seen so far. So like all of them are in like the 90 to 100, like $10-$15 range. This one currently, the price of all the cards is roughly like $70-$73. So you're definitely not getting as much value from this. There's no Cavaliers in this. It's definitely an older build. So I don't know how well this one will fare in April when this comes out. If you're bringing it to your local FNM, I think it's going to be good. But I think the Cavalier version just stomps this version for sure. But it gives you a good setup for turning this into the Cavalier version. But it's definitely like not as manipulable as like the mono red deck is. I think out of the box, that's going to be the best deck. And it's going to be the deck that's going to be the easiest to turn into a top tier deck. Because like I said, you've got all the cards already there. So that's basically it on the Challenger deck. So like I said, you've got your four decks. You got Final Adventure, which is the old Golgari Adventure deck. Notably has Fabled Passage, the two Castle Lochthwains, the Knight of Ebon Legion, the two two Murderous Riders, one Vraska Golgari Queen, four Noxious Grasps, stuff like that. Then you've got your Cavalcade Charge, which has play sets of Fervent Champion, Runaway Steamkin, Bonecrusher Giant, Torbran, three Chandra Acolyte of Fames, a full playset of Light Up the Stage, one Embercleave, like, it's got a lot to it. Three Experimental Frenzies on the sideboard. Then you've got Flash of Ferocity, which is the Simic Flash deck. You got yourself a playset of Spectral Sailor, Brineborn Cutthroat. You get yourself a playset of Drilled Mystic, Nightpack Ambusher, one Brazen Borrower, two Castle Vantresses, and one Fabled Passage as well. A sideboard is just full of, you know, three Aether Gusts, two Mystical Disputes, three Shifting Ceratops, just a ton of value in this deck too. And then, like I said, you got Allied Fires, which, I mean, it's got Kenrith, the return, one copy of Kenrith, four Narset, Part of Veils. It's got a few other Planeswalkers if you want them, Deafening Clarions. It's got the one and only Shockland and all of these steam vents, but really, there's not a lot to this deck in the form of value. So if you're really chasing after these to kind of flip them for value, I don't think the Allied Fires is really the one for you. But who knows? Depending on how busy your local gaming store is, this might be the only one in stock after release day. So if you want to get yours, you better make sure you get them quick, because I think a few of these will go pretty quickly. But you'll definitely see a downturn in some of the prices for some of the staples that are within these decks. Like I said, like Brazen Borrower, Embercleave, Fabled Passage, stuff like that. I think that they're definitely going to become maybe a little more affordable. We might see Fabled Passage creep back down into like the $12-$13 range. Brazen Borrower come back down to like the $15-$17 range. Embercleave coming back down to like the mid 15, low like 12. I don't know how these are going to affect the market, but in the past we had seen like cards like History of Benalia get reprinted, which it was like a $15 card, and then like one of them was in the Challenger deck and it dropped down to like $9, $9-$8. There's always been just fantastic value for all of these. So I'm looking forward to these. So like I said, if you're trying to get your friends into playing Magic with you, so the hardest part about introducing someone to Magic is to basically have a deck for them. That is the sole way to play Magic. You gotta have a deck. So these are really great ways to just really cheap ways to just build a really high tier deck right out of the box for your friends. So if you want your friend to come to FNM with you, you want to teach them Magic, maybe picking them up one of these decks, and then you getting one as well to, you know, have a pretty even power level against each other to kind of teach people and get some of your friends that maybe aren't in Magic anymore, get them back into Magic. So these Challenger decks are really great ways to do that. So yeah, a lot of value, a lot of really cool stuff with these. And I'm really excited for these in general. And I'm excited for the different people that are going to be able to get these and play Standard and be able to go to their FNMs without worries of like, hey, I got to drop, are you telling me I got to drop like $100 to $200 on a tier 2, tier 1 deck just to play FNM? No, you don't have to do that. You can pick one of these up, go to support your local gaming store and stuff like that. But anyways, so final topic of the day. We've got Pioneer. If you've played Pioneer recently, I bet your eyes are rolling to the back of your head right now, because yes, Pioneer is combo-y. Pioneer is so combo-y that I've heard people are comparing it to Modern. So they're saying Pioneer is basically Modern, but without the good mana and without the strong, like, stupid combos. So Modern has some really stupid combos, but Pioneer is just so combo-heavy right now. So there's two main decks that are just at the forefront of the meta. We've got our Dimir Inverter deck, which relies on the new... So basically, this deck didn't exist until Thassa's Oracle came out. So if you don't know what Thassa's Oracle is, it's basically a 2 blue for a 1/3 Merfolk, and it has an enter the battlefield ability. When it enters the battlefield, I believe it's look at the top X cards of your library, where X is your devotion. Pick one of those and put it on top of your library. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And then if X is greater than or equal to the amount of cards in your deck, you win the game instead. So that line of text is the most important part about that card, and it's the reason that the Dimir Inverter deck is so good. So, what's the Inverter? So we have the Inverter of Truth, I believe is what he's called. It's a 4 mana, 2/2 black for a 6/6 with flying. When it enters the battlefield, exile your library and shuffle your graveyard into your library. So it basically says, hey, I know I had like 45 cards in my deck. Now I have like 6 cards in my deck. And so I'm going to run cards like Thassa's Oracle, and I'm going to run cards like Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, which has the Lab Maniac effect, to where if you draw a card and your library is empty, instead of losing the game like you normally would, you win the game instead. So it's basically running those 3 cards to enable the combo. So Jace is there as another way to win. If like your Thassa's get, I don't know, taken out of your deck, and through one of those cards, like Slaughter Games and stuff like that, you can win with Jace. So just that combo in general, that you can do, you know, turn 4, my deck is gone, my library is tiny. Turn 5, cast Thassa's Oracle, I win the game. To a degree. Obviously, there's a little bit of a mix in between that, but it's so good. And the fact that it's in blue and black just gives it just... so many good counters and kill spells. So you got Fatal Pushes, you've got Thoughtseize, you've got any of the counters. Like, I noticed some are running Censor, running Dig Through Time, stuff like that. Just Drown in the Lock, which is the new blue-black counter or destroy equal to the amount of things in the opponent's graveyard. Like, stuff like that. It's so good, running Ops. And just what makes this so much better. Some people are saying this is better than Splinter Twin was in Modern, and I'll tell you why. So Splinter Twin was notoriously so blue-red. You don't have discard. You don't have Thoughtseize. You don't have Inquisition of Kozilek, Fatal Push. Just, you've got so many cards that black provides. And in combination with blue, like I said, you're going to get Drowned in the Locks and stuff like that. And Izzet didn't really have that. So Izzet had all the counter magic. And it had, like, bolts, and it had some burn and some disruption, but it didn't have, like, hand disruption. It didn't have a way to literally stop your opponent from having answers, which blue-black just has just a plethora of. And I think that's what makes Dimir Inverter so strong. And so that's one of the really strong decks in the format right now. Very oppressive, has put in a lot of great results. And then you have another deck that kind of just kind of came out of nowhere, also using the same card, Thassa's Oracle. And this is the Breach deck. So they call it Lotus Breach. So basically you're using a combination of what they call Twiddle effects, which are cards that you can play that kind of either cycle themselves and untap or tap things. And so you're going to play the Lotus Field, which is a hexproof land that when it enters the battlefield, sacrifice 2 lands. And then you can tap it for 3 mana of any color. So it's basically like your own Black Lotus land. So you can use that and combine it with those Twiddle effects to basically generate a lot more mana. And so then you play Underworld Breach, which is a card from Theros Beyond Death. It's an enchantment. It's 1 and a red. And it says each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's mana cost plus exile 3 other cards from your graveyard. And then at the beginning of your end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach. So you basically make sure you have a few Lotus Fields on the field. And then you cast this card, and you can basically go through and constantly grab Twiddle cards and just go off. And so obviously you need a few other cards to go off with that. You want to make sure you have cards in your graveyard because you're going to be, you know, exiling cards to escape stuff. So you're going to need a few cards like that as well. It runs like Satyr Wayfinder, just all kinds of different things. And looks like some versions are also running Fae of Wishes to pull stuff out of the sideboard, which is just crazy. So like they can pull any kind of answer to whatever your opponent's stuff is. And basically they go through their deck as quick as possible, just constantly untapping and generating mana. And then eventually, most of them just throw down a Thassa's Oracle and win. Though there are some newer versions of this deck that are running other win conditions like Jace. Like they could Fae of Wishes for a Jace, Wielder of Mysteries. So this deck has also been really nutty. There's been a lot of variations of this deck. The one I'm most familiar with is just I think it's a 2-mana enchantment that attaches to your land, and whenever the land becomes tapped, mill yourself for 3. So like you basically generate escape fuel from that. There's definitely some newer versions of that. I haven't really been keeping up with Pioneer recently, especially after like the meta has really just like came in on itself, and so many people are just so tired of Pioneer and tired of all these combo decks that people are just begging for Wizards to do something. And this last week, Wizards like said, "Hey, we'll let you know if we want to ban anything. We'll tell you a week in advance." And that was it. They didn't tell us anything else. So we don't actually, no one actually knows if this is going to be banned. People are assuming that Thassa's Oracle is going to get banned. Obviously something in Lotus Breach, since the newer versions of Lotus Breach kind of stopped running Thassa's Oracle. So yeah, it's been like basically those two decks. And then in the middle, Bant Spirits, which is a deck I was at the forefront of like 3 months ago. Like when Pioneer first came out, I wanted to build Coco Spirits, and that's what I did. And lo and behold, Bant Spirits, the deck I built forever ago, is now like a tier one deck in Pioneer because it's the only deck that really puts Dimir Inverter in his place. And so, yeah, I'm really happy about that. So it basically runs all the spirits that counter things, make things indestructible, stuff like that, which is just fantastic against Dimir Inverter's game plan, because their game plan is to control you as hard as possible, discard stuff out of your hand, counter your things, destroy your creatures, stuff like that, so that they can get to the end game, which is, you know, later in the game where they can just easily win, even in the same turn. So Bant Spirits, mwah, fantastic game. Mwah, mwah, love that deck. Still own it. A lot of the cards have gone up, and it's actually a pretty pricey deck now. But I will probably be whipping it out sometime soon. But yeah, Pioneer is a mess. If you play it right now, then I'm sorry. If you're playing one of the good decks, then keep playing the good decks. If you're playing Dimir Inverter, keep playing it. Play it as much as you can. And you're like, "No, Chase, don't play the banned decks. No, don't tell them to play the banned decks. I don't want to play against the banned decks." No, keep playing the banned decks. Play them because not only are they good, but the more you play them, the quicker they'll get banned. So yeah, you guys just keep grinding Dimir Inverter, Lotus Breach on MTGO and in tournaments. Just keep grinding them. Hey, they're good. They're going to give you good win streaks. Play them while they last so they can get banned faster. That's basically what I have to say. Thanks for listening to my TED Talk, everyone. Hopefully next week we're going to be able to get somebody else in the studio, so I'm not just talking to myself for, what is it, 45 minutes, stuff like that. Really appreciate you guys for listening. If you're a solo podcast, my solo podcast, not your cup of tea, like I said, this is not how it always is. This is just, we're in between right now. So we had a co-host for a while. He had to step away to take care of some things, and hopefully we'll get him back. And if not, I'm going to really be searching hard to find somebody else to take his place. But right now, he's kind of letting me, he's in a way, maybe he's leading me on, but I don't think David would do that to me. But, he's promising that he'll be back. He just doesn't know when. Right now, it's just going to be me. You'll get podcasts of just me talking about stuff, my life, the world, dogs barking, stuff like that. And sometimes you'll get somebody else and me talking. So yeah, pretty exciting stuff. Hopefully some good topics that I've kind of got on the back burner that I'd like to not discuss by myself, hopefully coming out sometime soon. So appreciate all the love and support that I receive. Like I said, follow our Twitter. RTR Forward tells you when new episodes are coming out. Sometimes we post random things. I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty bad about posting on Twitter. And it's most the fact that, like, I don't know what to post. So, like, people post stuff every day and it's witty or it's just random. But, like, I don't know. I'm not a big, like, person to, like, post my opinion and stuff. So, like, if I post anything, it's just memes. So I think I'm just going to keep posting memes and keep doing me. So you can follow me at PerchedMTG on Twitter and our main podcast at RTR Forward. And we're also on YouTube. So this is all, if you're listening to us on YouTube, thank you. If you're listening to us on Spotify, thank you. Give us a follow. If you're listening to us on MTG Cast, go to our Spotify, go to our YouTube, give us a follow, give us a subscribe, stuff like that. And yeah, thank you all for listening, and we'll tune back in next week, and we'll talk about something a little different. Hopefully, maybe in the next few weeks, we can talk about some Pioneer bans or some Pioneer changes. So with that out of the way, appreciate you, and have a good day.